Okay, well, I'm happy to be here with each of you today. We explored last week, let me get you caught up where we are in this series. We explored last week that when Jesus came, his basic message was, look, friends, I'm not coming to rob you of life, to give you a bunch of rules and restrictions to worry about following. I'm coming to give you, John 10, verse 9, green pastures, an image of abundance and peace. Because too many folks, both in the broader Greco-Roman world at the time and also in the Jewish world at the time, too many folks believed that the human relationship with the gods or with God was put your head down, do the right thing, endure life the best you can now, and hope for a reward later. But that's just not it, Jesus said. I have come to bring good news, Mark chapter 1, Matthew chapter 3. And the good news is the kingdom of God is now available, which is why Jesus went about healing and loving and forgiving and hanging out with all kinds of people, which is why Jesus is always more interested in breaking down walls than in building walls, which is why Jesus said, I'm a wide open gate to anyone. He's not a closed gate. Which is why Jesus, for much of his teaching ministry, is actually very practical about how you can do things and orient your life in such a way so as to begin to experience the divine presence all around you and the abundant availability of God's wisdom in your life right here and right now. Which is why he concluded his discussion with the religious folk that day saying, John 10 and verse 10, I have come that you may have life and have it to the full and have it abundantly. And so Jesus would talk a lot about not what you have to endure in order to get to an abundant life after you die, but he would talk a lot about how you and I can experience an abundant life here and now under the loving wisdom of the divine. And so last week we began to explore a topic that Jesus taught on perhaps more than any other topic. And if you were here, then you know what that topic is, right? Money. Because if you add up all that Jesus said about salvation and heaven and hell, he actually said more about my money and my possessions than all of that combined. And if you look at the entire New Testament, which is about the life of Jesus and the life of those who sought to put his teachings into practice, in the New Testament, there are, according to one scholar, 500 verses on prayer, fewer than 500 verses on faith, but 2,350 verses on money and possessions. Jesus talked more about money than anything else. And yet, it wasn't because Jesus wants to get your money. In the whole New Testament, in fact, only once does Jesus ask anyone for money, and that's only to borrow it for an illustration. He borrows a coin, and then he gives it back. So Jesus says a ton about money, but he never asked anyone for it. Because he wasn't trying to get people's money. He was trying to make sure that people's money didn't get them. Because Jesus knew what we know, which is money has a huge grip on your heart and mine. Our thoughts are often trapped in service of it. Our hearts are caught up in wonder, if I just had more, what would I do? And so we hoard it, and we fight over it, and we lie about it, and we worry about it, and we micromanage it, and crimes are committed for it, and wars are fought over it. In fact, money is so important in our culture, and I said this last week, that if I raise my hand and I promise to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help me God, you're not quite sure if I'm going to tell the truth. But you'll probably believe me, or at least the level of my conviction, if I put my money where my mouth is. Because how you would never risk your money. Friends, if you follow the money, it will tell you the truth, because money talks. And if you follow the money, you'll learn about people's hearts and their motives and their worries and their plans. There's no doubt about it. Money has a grip on our culture. And so last week we talked about God's wisdom for every paycheck. This is what we talked about last week. God's wisdom for every paycheck, every increase. God's wisdom. And we said three things last week. First bit of wisdom is know, K-N-O-W. Know where every penny comes from and where it goes. There's no reason for there to be a mystery about your money. And you'll never discover the abundant life if you're constantly lost and confused about your money. How much is coming in and where it's going. Number two, we said last week, you'll never discover the abundant life if you don't discover the absolute joy of sharing some of every paycheck. Every time you get an increase, share some of it. Number three, we said last week, you'll never discover an abundant life if you aren't saving some from every paycheck. No, share, save. Three words, three ways to experience the more abundant life. But today, I want to tell you that there's a few more than just three ideas. There's a few more things that are enormously helpful, abundantly life-giving, and they're peace-producing ideas about wisdom, all rooted in the scriptures for our money and time that we need to consider today. And so I don't want to leave this subject without putting these on the table for you, because some of these that I say, you'll be like, I agree, I don't agree, I wouldn't have said it quite like he said it, I want to talk to him about that one. Or here, what about the ones you missed? So in the time that remains, what I want to do today is I want to give you six ways, rooted in the scriptures, to get rich quick. I thought that would get our attention. Six ways to get rich quick. Now I'm telling you what I'm about to say, these have direct bearing on your actual finances. But I think you'll also understand that my phrasing, get rich quick, will also be much, I think, bigger and better and more beautiful than just getting financially rich. So it does apply to our immediate money, but it applies to things much bigger and better than that as well. So here we go. Number one, the first way to get rich quick, number one, is chase the cause, not the cash. Chase the cause, not the cash. Pursue a cause that you can believe in more than the money you think it might bring. I have a friend. I'm going to call him James. It's not his name. He's in his 50s now. And I talked to him this week. And I asked him to remind me of a story from his life that I had already heard. And he reminded me that when he was 16 years old, he got his first car. And he got a newspaper route, delivering papers at 4 a.m. in the morning. And he said, I'll never forget, something got into me, 16 years old. I wanted to finish the paper route faster than anybody else. And I wanted the papers to be delivered closer to the front doors and in better condition than anyone else I worked with. And he said, for me, it wasn't about the money. In fact, when they offered to give me a raise, I suggested they hire another employee instead. for better service. And that's what they did. Later, they did promote me, he said, but I quickly learned that $5 more an hour won't help you get rich quick. But I was already rich, he said, in this cause. A few years later, he said, he noticed semi-trucks, you know, the 18-wheelers, broken down on the side of the road. And he said, I began to wonder, how long do they sit there waiting for a part or parts to arrive or until a tow truck comes? And he said, I started thinking, I bet I can serve the semi-truck industry more excellently. And so he worked with warehouses at strategic locations along interstates to house the most likely to break down semi-truck parts. So when a truck broke down, his company would get the call and his company would outperform its rivals. He said, it was never about the money for me. It was about seeing a problem and solving a problem and doing something for a greater cause. He said, I started falling in love with causes in my life. And causes have always come first for me, and the cash has always come second. Now you can imagine he's pretty well-to-do, and he is. But he's a believer in causes first. In theoretical physicist Michio Kaku's book on Einstein, he says that next to Einstein's bed, the bed he was laying in during the last hours of his life, the bed he died in, next to Einstein's bed, he had a notepad with math formulas scribbled on them. And what was he doing, literally, in the last minutes of his life? Trying to figure out a unified theory for physics. It wasn't about the fame or the money for Einstein. It was this cause that he was so rich in that it drove him. Read about Mozart. He would have been making music even if no one had ever listened. And in fact, he did, because for a significant part of his life, no one did care. You know, we live in a society where people equate success with money, but we ought to be equating success with cause. Friends, it is always a mistake to chase the cash. Just look at people who chase cash. They end up depressed, stressed, addicted, and suicidal. Cutting corners, trying to increase margins, treating other people like cogs in a wheel, like stepping stones to their goal. If you think I'm making this up, just read the news about people who chase the money. But if you start chasing a cause, what will happen is you'll end up more curious and more creative and more excited and more alive. Now, I'm not saying to change your job. I am saying to change your job description. Think about it. You're not stocking shelves. You're encouraging and celebrating a community of fellow shelf stalkers. That's a cause. Yeah. You're not explaining math formulas or cleaning up a science lab or teaching English students about dangling modifiers. You're unlocking a world of possibilities for your students. And who knows? You really might be teaching the next Einstein. Or the next Mozart, or the next Maya Angelou, or the next Ronald Acuna. Paul writes about this in Colossians chapter 3 to a church he loves. He says, whatever you do, do it with all your might, not for the cash, but for the cause, for the Lord. Because there's something far greater than the cash, it's the cause. And some of us need to stop serving the cash and start serving a cause greater than ourselves, we need to rewrite our job descriptions and then start watching the flood of abundance come our way. I'm telling you, it's very hard to get rich quick by chasing the money. It's very easy to get rich quick by chasing a cause. You can start getting rich tomorrow morning at work when you start chasing a cause. Number two, second way to get rich quick, number two, is look at yourself in the, now do you know what comes next? Look at yourself in the money. You're going to remember this one now, aren't you? That's right. Listen, money is a mirror. Money is a mirror. So by the way, it's a synonym. Money is a mirror. Which is why, listen, if you opened up my checkbook or my credit card statement online and you saw that I spend money on tennis rackets, tennis balls, tennis shoes, tennis leagues, tennis magazines, and tickets to Arthur Ashe Stadium in New York in September, you would rightly assume that I care about tennis and that my time and my attention follows tennis and therefore has a place in my heart. If you looked at my credit card statement, and you saw MARTA, Delta, MARTA, Uber, Delta, Uber, Royal Caribbean, Norwegian, Princess, Carnival, you could rightly predict, come on, that I like to travel and that my time and my attention are significantly devoted to discovering places to travel and to experience. You can look at yourself in the money. I had a friend who some time ago owned Home Depot stock, and he would drive by Lowe's, drive by Ace Hardware in order to shop at the Depot. And when he checked his stock averages on his phone, he skipped over a lot of companies, but he would always stop on Home Depot stock prices. Because I'm telling you, show me where your treasure is, show me where your money is, and I'll tell you where your heart is. Money, money on the wall. Tell me what I value most of all. Which is why your money is a better reflection of your heart of worship than the words you sang this morning. Because you can say, oh, I give you my heart. I give you my soul. Here's my heart, Lord. But if your pocketbook is stuck in a place where no one can get it, your treasure will tell the truth about your heart. And the reason that looking at yourself in the money is a secret to becoming truly rich is because if you don't know where your treasure is, then you won't be rich, you'll be lost. You'll have no idea where you are or where you're going. You won't be truly rich. You'll be truly lost and confused because you have no idea where your heart is. You'll think your heart is somewhere, but it won't be there. You cannot be truly rich if your heart is confused. So you have to look at yourself in the money to know where your heart is. Number three, third way to get rich quick. It's actually directly linked to number two. Is employ money to shape your heart. You see, this is a logical extension of point two, right? It's not just put your money where your mouth is, it's put your money where you want your heart to be. So you can actually pick what you want to care about, put your money there before you care about it, and once your money goes there, you'll start caring about it. Pick what you want to care about first. Pick how you want your heart to be shaped first. Put your money there, and you'll start caring about it. I'm saying if you want to care more about the Atlanta Braves, but you don't yet, buy season tickets to their games this year. Purchase the MLB Network cable package. Buy an Ozzie Albies and a Freddie Freeman jersey. And then watch your heart start following the Braves. I'm saying if you want to care more about your car, some of you don't even care about your car. If I looked inside, there's like French fries and there's straw wrappers on the ground. You don't care about it. I'll tell you how you can start caring about your car if you don't yet. Spend money on a new paint job outside and on a comprehensive cleaning on the inside, and you'll start caring. Or fork over a bunch of bucks for a brand new car and watch how your heart cares about parking far away from all the other cars and how your heart cares about the little tiny scratch that you never noticed before. I'm not trying to be clever. I'm actually trying to be real. You put your money somewhere and your heart will follow it. Unless you think this idea is original with me, I think you know who I'm plagiarizing, right? Jesus, who said, wherever your treasure is, your heart will follow. If you want to care more about a savings plan for your retirement, do you want to think more about your retirement and a savings plan? Stop thinking about it. Start saving, and you'll start watching it. Oh, I'm going to retire soon. How's it doing? Put your money in, your heart will follow. If you want to care more about digging freshwater wells in third world countries, I'll be honest with you, some of you care more than others of you do about digging freshwater wells in third world countries. But if you want to start caring more, start putting a little bit from each paycheck towards it and watch your heart start caring. See, the spirit here is, don't wait for your heart, lead your heart. Lead your heart. Employ money to shape your heart. Employ money to shape your heart, and you'll get rich quick. Number four, the fourth way to get rich quick is this. Give, and then gain. Notice the order, because a lot of people think you have to gain first and then you give after that. That's no way to get rich quick. Here's the order. Give and then gain. What I'm saying is if you prioritize giving, you'll get rich quick. That is, you'll be rich in an abundant life really fast. But if you prioritize gaining first, it takes a long time to gain. It's a long journey that way. I know a guy lives in North Carolina. His name is Dave. Whenever he comes across just normal everyday people, whoever they are, a 17-year-old student that he learns about from a public high school social worker, a store clerk who has served beyond the call of duty, a single mother who is struggling to balance a million things and multiple jobs, whenever Dave comes across ordinary, everyday people and he learns their stories, he gives to them. And I'll tell you, Dave is ridiculously happy. Now, Dave works hard. Dave makes good money. He has a good bit of wealth, but he knows that a great bit of wealth comes by giving. So, true story, I know this guy. He will secretly help people out. There was a high school teacher, married with two kids. And for whatever reason, this high school teacher and his family were known for not locking their front door. I don't recommend that. One day, now Dave could have gotten in trouble for this. One day when the family was gone, he snuck in and left a huge gift card to a local grocery store taped to their refrigerator. No name. He just loves doing stuff like that. I'm just saying there's probably no better way to gain than to give. You know, some people wonder why they lack joy and why they lack peace and why they lack great friendships, why they lack an abundant life. I think it's at least possible it's because they've got the give-gain order wrong. I'm saying if you're not feeling healthy in any area of your life, if you say, I'm going to prioritize giving, probably everything else in your life will start gaining. It's not just with your money either. John Maxwell talks about this in his, I think, his best book, the book he wrote called 15 Invaluable Laws of Growth. He writes in his book about the importance of giving, and he says, people who have a low self-esteem often see themselves as inadequate. I don't have enough of this. I don't have enough energy. I don't have enough money. I don't have enough emotions. I'm feeling down. I'm feeling depressed. I'm a victim. And then he writes this. You can combat those feelings by serving others and working to add value to them. Making a difference, even a small one, in the lives of other people lifts one's self-esteem. He says it's hard to feel bad about yourself when you're doing something good for someone else. In addition to that, adding value to others makes them value you more. It creates a cycle of positive feeling from one person to the another. In other words, give and watch yourself gain. And you can do this with your time and your talent and your listening, and you can also do it with your money. How dare you let somebody else take you out to eat and pay for you? They are robbing you of the joy. Don't let them rob you of joy. Give to them before they give to you. What if that was the new competition? Who's going to give more? No joke, they're driving home happier than you if they've given to you. This is actually truly the little known secret of money. It is only when you start to give away what you have that you begin to gain riches far beyond what you ever imagined. See, money is like a river. Money is like a river. And rivers have to flow or they die. But a flowing river brings life and richness to all the banks alongside it, and it's filled up with a team of living creatures and fish and all kinds of things, all kinds of life. But you dam up the river, and it stops giving and flowing, and everything dies. Money is like a river. Friends, don't waste a chance to get rich. Get busy giving. Number five, the fifth way to get rich quick, is to see abundance, not scarcity. A couple weeks ago, I went to Target. There's a Target shopping center by my house. I went to Target to get some groceries. I came back out to my car, and my car would not start. It wouldn't crank. And I remembered in that moment, yeah, yesterday it was having a lot of problems starting. It was like taking a long time to crank. So I immediately assumed that it was my battery. Could be my alternator, but I thought, well, it's probably my battery. If I can just get another car in this whole parking lot to give me, to jump my car, I can go straight to the car dealer place and they can get a new battery. I always carry jumper cables in my car, so I raised the lid on my car, the front. I got the jumper cables up back so I could stage my request so people would know. I mean, I have this long, big red set of jumper cables. True story. In fact, I don't know why I do this. I guess when you start speaking a fair bit, you get used to this. So I actually took a picture of my car in the parking lot there, and there's my car in the Target parking lot. So I have jumper cables in my hand, and a lady walks out of the exit. Is there a picture of that, Omar, or not? Yeah. Okay, see that yellow line right there? A lady walked out of that exit door right there. I went to the back of my car, and I started approaching her. No joke, she started walking up the row, and then she saw me, and she ducked behind and went around in the other lane right there. She veered off. I swear to you, no lie. Now, maybe I looked intimidating, but that was not where she was headed when I started approaching her. Shortly thereafter, a truck pulled in to identify that spot. This is Exhibit B. A truck pulled in that spot right on the other side of that white vehicle. And I started approaching the guy, and I asked for his help. And he said to me, "Oh, man, dude, I'd like to. I'm just in a really big hurry. I don't have time." I said to him, "If you pull your car up right here, it'll take 30 seconds. He said, "I'd love to, man. I'm sorry." He just walked right into the store. Finally, a guy with an older car pulled up, and he parked Exhibit C off the screen. He parked in a whole other section. And he got out. He was a young guy, probably in his 20s. He had a hoodie on. And I said to him, cable in hand, "Would you mind pulling your car up next to mine and helping me jumpstart my car?" And he said, "Sure." So he pulled his car right in front of mine. Took us 30 seconds to get started. And I thanked him, and I said, "Thank you so much." He said to me, I'll never forget, he said, "No worries," and this is the line I'll never forget, "I always got time to do something like this." 20-year-old kid, hoodie. "I always got time to do something like this." That's what he said, "Always got time." My first thought was, well, the priest didn't have time, walked by on the other side. The Levite didn't have time, walked by on the other side. And now I know who the Good Samaritan is, the one who's always got time. How many times, friends, do we say stuff like this? "I just don't have enough time." We all have the same amount of time, by the way. Like, well, I have time, but you don't. But it's like we have the same. It all has to do with whether you see your life as filled with abundance or filled with scarcity. There's a great book all about this, actually. It's by a Harvard professor of economics, a guy named Senthil Melanathan. His book is called Scarcity, The New Science. It's all about the science of scarcity, the science of having less, or at least thinking you do, and how it defines your life. He says in the book, among other things, he says, scarcity is not just a physical constraint. Scarcity is not just, you know, what I have or don't have. It is also a mindset. When scarcity captures our attention, it changes how we think and how we behave and how we navigate our lives. And the whole book is about what is capturing your attention. Is it your abundance or is it your scarcity? Do you see what's not in your checkbook or what is in your checkbook? Do you see what's not in your refrigerator or what's in your refrigerator? He says, what you pay attention to will drive your decisions and your identity and your friendships and your future. Do you go around thinking, I have an abundance of things, or I have a scarcity of things? He talks about this. In other words, is your mindset, I don't have enough friends, I don't have enough time, or is it all the friends you do have and all the time you do have? And I might add, do you think more about the God I can't understand and the God I can't see and the God I can't hear? Or do you think more about the evidence that abounds all around us of a God who loves his creation and who cares about you and me? See, the question is your fundamental outlook one of what you don't have or what you do have? Because it's so easy to focus on what you don't have. Take, for example, a gym membership. How many here, just by quick show of hands, have a gym membership? Yeah, so you're making my point. I have a gym membership, by the way. It's an awesome gym membership. My gym, no joke, is open, no lie, 24/7. 365. And it has unlimited square footage. It's called Fitness Planet. But it's not indoors because it's actually the planet. It's not Gold's Gym. I call it God's Gym. Sorry for the cheesiness. I exercise outdoors for free. My gym membership is amazing. I see the, well, it's my example. Sorry, it's not perfect. Do you see the abundance? We all have gym memberships. Some of us just pay more. Some of us get better deals and have more space. I just wonder, you know, it's this way with so many things. We just don't see our abundance. And because this talk is more narrowly focused, or at least it was earlier in the talk, on money, let me just tell you about how we see our scarcity with money too. And you'll recognize these stats because you've probably read them around, but very few of us this morning probably think ourselves as man, I have so much abundance with money and possessions. We probably tend to think of what we don't have with our money. But did you know that if your household income, that's income from whatever sources you get, if your household income is over $50,000 a year, you're in the top half of 1%, half of 1%, top half of wage earners in the entire world. Did you know if your household income is over $30,000 a year, you're in the top 5% of everyone who makes money in the whole world? If you live in a house with a garage, you are among the richest 4% of people in the world. And do you most easily recognize that your copay is too high? Or when you make a copay, do you recognize I'm one of only 50% of human beings with access to essential health services? And have you gone on a vacation in the last year? Then you vacationed more than 75% of the world in the last 12 months. And if you own more than two pairs of shoes, you're richer than 80% of the world. And if you own a car, you are among of only 8% of people in the world. And if you make more than $3 a day, then you make more than half the world. And if by chance you don't feel rich today, I'm just saying it could be because you're more focused on all the things you don't have than all the abundance you do have. And by the way, scarcity mindset is not just about how you view your money or your time. It's how you view every situation you walk into. One of the reasons I love the story in the Bible of David and Goliath in Scripture is because in the struggle with Goliath, all of Israel sees their scarcity, their inadequacy. We can't take on Goliath. Goliath is a really big dude and we're in trouble. But David looks at the same situation and he sees it from a place of abundance. David says, I can take him because I've got a huge God on my side. And I got this sling and a few stones, and you combine a huge, great, big divine with that, I can take him. Because you live and you move and you breathe from the perspective of what you don't have, or you live and you move and you breathe from perspective of what you do have. And so I just want to say to all of us today, TNC, you might be in a hard season right now. Or you might know somebody who's in a hard season right now. But I want you to know that there's no place that life can take you that God's presence can't reach you. There really is no giant that can defeat you if you see an abundant God that will take your rocks and your sling and help you defeat your enemy. If you want to get rich quick, start seeing your abundance that you already have, and you'll realize, I'm rich. See the abundance already available to you. And then finally, number six, the sixth way to get rich quick is to move on from your mistakes. You know, mistakes in life are for learning from, not dwelling on. Don't give your mistake more power than it warrants by squandering precious time, beating yourself up over it, and worrying about it. If you've messed something up, yeah, spend a few minutes working out why, and then move on. You know, when you travel, too much baggage always will slow you down. A carry-on is always faster than checked luggage. Stop checking so much luggage. Too many people walk around carrying a heap of baggage with them: guilt, debt, fear, grudge, a mistake, financial worry. I think one of the most beautiful things about Jesus is people met Jesus, he offered them life with God, currently, presently, immediately available, and they always left with lighter baggage. They never left feeling more guilty about their mistakes. They always left feeling more optimistic, less judged, more hopeful. By the way, this is our church, is it not? This is one of the most grace-giving, second chance pouring out places you'll ever come to. I don't think anyone here is going to judge you for your mistakes, so stop judging yourself. Ask people for help, whether it's about time or money or talents or whatever, relationships. You're going to get nothing but grace and wisdom. After all, that's what Jesus gave people when he came, when they came to him. It's why he said, hey, come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I'll give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. It's the Jesus who said, my grace is sufficient for you. I have not come to rob you of life, but to bring you life and to bring it to the full. So, I say we get rich quick around here. Chase the cause, not the cash. Look at yourself in the money. Employ money to shape your heart. Give, then gain. See your abundance, not your scarcity. And let's move on from our mistakes. And we'll conclude the series next week. God, today is just exactly what we all needed. And part of that's because we all got something differently out of it. And part of it is because someone sitting here in a chair is like, oh, not one for me. That's because you're still trying to help work with them and figure out what it means. But I'm fully convinced that wherever the divine presence is fully available, and your presence is, and wherever we're fully open, and I sure believe that we are, that you want to do something inside our hearts and minds that will lead to the most abundant life we could ever imagine. So you help us lean into your wisdom and your love in the atmosphere of this amazingly grace-oriented community. Thank you, God. Amen.